Welcome to Copcast, a series of monthly arable podcasts bringing you the latest information, timely updates and expert advice. In today's episode...
Some of the products we looked at don't have direct antifungal activity themselves. So what you're trying to do is get the most of them. You're just trying to switch on the plant host defense response. You want to use all of the genes that you've got in the plant for fighting off infection. So all these elicitors are doing is think about it as priming the plant. So you use the methylene hopefully before the disease has arrived and you've switched on the defenses and the plant's ready to fight off any disease if it does come into the crop.
I am Tiffany Stevenson and this is the first part of a two-part series on natural products. In this episode, we're focusing in on what natural products are as well as talking about elicitors with Dr. Neil Havis. In the second episode of this two-part podcast, we're talking about biostimulants and a new product which is on the market called Vixarin, where we're joined by Andy Cunningham from Syngenta. I'm delighted to be talking to Dr. Neil Havis. Neil, would you like to begin by introducing yourself?
Thank you, Tiffany. My name's Neil Havis and I'm a plant pathologist. I work for SRUC and I'm based at King's Buildings in Edinburgh.
So today we're going to be focusing on elicitors, but before we get there, shall we just begin with talking about what natural products are?
So natural products, there's a lot of things coming to market, and by natural products we mean things of a biological origin, and you can compare that with the kind of synthetic inputs that we're used to in terms of, well, obviously synthetic nitrogen, but the synthetic crop protection products as well. So natural ones would be from a biological origin.
So for the uses of these natural products, do they fit into different categories?
They do. There's quite there's a lot of contention in where they sit. They've straddled. So the regulations that concern fertilizer usage, some of the products straddle between that, but then some of them also have impact on plant pathogens. So they sit in the plant protection products. So it's been a difficulty in trying to categorize these products, and that's made it quite a challenge for developing some of these products and bringing them to market, as people don't know where they sit, or sometimes they're moved into their own category, which can be quite expensive for a small company trying to produce something.
So what are the categories that they could potentially be put into?
So they can be put into what's called biostimulants. So anything that's has an impact on plant processes, and they generally are governed by the fertilizer recommendations. And the UK has their own fertilizer recommendations following Brexit, but they're still based on the European definitions. But then the plant protection products are governed by the CRD, so it's a Chemical Regulatory Directorate, which is part of HSE. Anything which is claiming to have activity against a pathogen has to go through the whole registration process, which involves expensive environmental testing as well to make sure there's no impacts on non-target organisms. So that's the thing that can be quite expensive. And if they're approved on that, they would go into the Green Book, which some of the listeners might be familiar with, or you would find them on the CRD website in terms of in the plant protection products category.
So you're saying that they're going to have to go through testing to check they're not having a detrimental impact on other organisms in the environment. Is there a lot of testing and research that goes into checking that the products are going to work as well as the claims can be? Because I know some people can be a bit wary of this.
Sure. I mean, it's probably more tightly regulated on the plant protection product side. So if you're claiming efficacy against a pathogen, you have to produce a dossier through a series of repeated trials across numerous sites, geographically separate, to provide that evidence. So you have to provide evidence of efficacy. The more loosely governed one is the fertilizer recommendations. So that's where you can claim to have an impact on crop production. It could be on yield. Those are ones which are not so tightly regulated, and the regulators don't ask for the extensive dossier and all that repeated trials before stuff can come to market. So that's where you get a lot of more grey areas as well.
So today we're going to be talking about elicitors. shall we begin with, what are elicitors?
So an elicitor would be defined as anything which incites the natural plant defense system. And what plants respond to is they respond to different components of either a plant pathogen or a bacteria, or they can even recognize damage which is caused by a pathogen attack. And that can be something as simple as a sugar. So you can imagine if your plant is attacked by a pathogen, it damages the cell, some sugar is released, the plant recognizes there's free sugar, it can think that's evidence of attack, and that can switch on the natural defense mechanisms. It goes through a whole complicated cascade process in the plant, but it ultimately produces defense mechanisms and defense symptoms. These can be thickening of cell walls, these can be antifungal or antibacterial pathogens, or any kind of compounds that the plant might produce to stop infection taking place.
So I'm guessing at the moment there's probably a huge range of different elicitors that are available to farmers?
Surprisingly, there's a lot of research going on, and there has been research for a long time. We at SRUC, we were looking at a lot of different products which we know elicit the defense response. And some of these, something as simple like saccharin, a simple sugar that you can buy. But again, what I said to you, the difficulties and the costly part of registering these products has stopped a lot of them coming to market. So there's actually not that many registered elicitor products on the market. The most significant one you will find in the Green Book is a product called Iodis, which is produced by UPL, and it's based on a brown seaweed extract, and that has registration as a plant protection product. It has proven efficacy in wheat crops early on in the growing season. You can use it up to the T-naught timing, and that will confer some resistance to plant pathogens. But there was a lot more interest, and the predictions is a lot more elicitors will come to market. But at the moment, that's the main one that's available.
So with that product that's available, if you can only use it up to the T-naught timing, it does have to be put on quite promptly.
Mm-hmm. It does have to go on promptly, but that, I mean, we've been doing a lot of research in our field trials as part of the Scottish Government funded work package. And that's where we think these elicitors may have a role. Some of the products that are looked at don't have direct antifungal activity themselves. So what you're trying to do is get the most of them. You're just trying to switch on the plant host defense response. You want to use all of the genes that you've got in the plant for fighting off infection. So all these elicitors are doing is think about it as priming the plant. So you use them early, hopefully before the disease has arrived, and you've switched on the defenses, and the plant's ready to fight off any disease if it does come into the crop.
So does this potentially mean that you might be able to reduce your fungicide program slightly if it's had Iodis or some other elicitor and switch on those mechanisms already?
That's exactly what we're looking at, Tiffany. So in our trials, we've been looking at these elicitor products, and then we've been cutting back on the fungicide program. So generally, as a rule of thumb, the most advice on terms of fungicide use is probably around about half of the manufacturer's recommended dose. So we looked at that, but with the elicitors, we were cutting that down to a quarter of the recommended dose. So if you think about it, you're almost saving half of your fungicide spend. And we're still seeing good responses in terms of disease control, but most importantly, we were seeing that yield response in terms of controlling the disease. So we've looked at the Iodis, we've looked at other elicitor products which were more experimental, but we've seen the same response year after year in our trials. You can see that boost from using the elicitors early on and then the reduced rate fungicide. And it's perhaps slightly behind what would we term as the full fungicide program or normal, but it's not significantly behind. And you're saving, as I said, you're saving a lot of money on your fungicide costs because you're halving your fungicide input.
I know we're not talking about a specific elicitor that you could use, but how does the cost of an elicitor compare to when you're putting on fungicides?
So some of the figures we were looking at and the figures we were given for Iodis at its application rate came out around about £19 per hectare. So I think that was a few years ago, but you can gauge that against the cost of a fungicide for think about your fungicide input and think about how much it would cost you to half that. In the barley crops we were looking at, there was £16 to £17 cost benefit to using the Aodis and then cutting down on your fungicides. So that, I mean, that given that was a few years ago, but think about it in those that context.
So there is potential savings for the farmers.
There is potential savings, so that's an economic benefit. And of course, in terms of how we manage the crop protection products we do have, saving a fungicide spray timing and using something which is not going to put a selection pressure on the pathogen is a good idea in terms of resistance management as well.
So for an IPM strategy, it's something that's good to do, and hopefully going forward, there'll be more opportunities for people to use them.
Well, absolutely. It ticks the box. I mean, if you think about the IPM pyramid and you're thinking about all of the options you do to try and manage disease, from varietal choice, from seedbed preparation. So the elicitors would sit in the kind of area of biological control, but you're making the most, as I said, you're making the most of the plant genetics that are available. And then what you're doing, so the chemical control always sits at the top of the IPM pyramid, but it's really, it's rational, justified use. And if you're using the elicitors, you're justifying the minimal amount of fungicide that you need to control the disease. And it's a step away from the more prophylactic, safety first, put on plenty of fungicide just in case.
So before we mentioned that you'll be able to reduce your fungicide program if you're using an elicitor, are you seeing the yield benefit with a reduced program, or are you just seeing the yield benefit if you're using your full fungicide program?
You can see a clear advantage. So what we've been looking at in the most recent set of trials is comparing the reduced rate program with and without the elicitor. So you can see the benefit of adding the elicitor, and you can see it in the trials that we're doing. Looking at barley, you can see that benefits is there.
So we've talked about Aodis, which is made out of seaweed. What mm-hmm. other sort of products are there available?
So there are other products. So there's something called chitosan, which is an acetylated compound based on chitin, which is part of fungal cell walls. And people have been looking at that. They've been looking at some of the silicon, salicylic acid. These are more kind of experimental, but they have been looking at that. So these are things that are available. And what we found is that a lot of the products you might be able to find, and they'd be classed as biostimulants. So what you won't find on the label is any claims or any information relating to disease control. They're being added to boost the plant's metabolism and have an impact on crop yield. So some of these products are available. The downside is they won't say anything specifically about disease control, because then it would have to be a registered plant protection product. So there is some work looking at them. But more recently, some of the research has shown that chitosan, and that's been quite well studied, there's quite a lot of interest in that, now actually has direct antifungal properties. So if this is going to come to market and if people want to market this, they're going to have to go through that expensive registration process. So that it may be something that a company is prepared to take on the cost, or it may actually be something that inhibits this coming through to market for people to use.
So at the moment, people are quite limited in what they are able to use as an elicitor.
They are limited, but as I said, if you look at the portfolios and the research and development from the big ag chem companies, they're looking a lot more at these elicitor products. They're looking a lot more at alternatives to conventional chemistry. And I've mentioned laminar, and it's a brown seaweed. A quick glance through any of the product brochures, or if you listen to any of the fertilizer companies' talks, there's a lot of interest in seaweed extracts coming forward. There's a lot of companies starting up programs to extract material from seaweed. And again, this is nothing new. This has been known for hundreds of years, that you can add kelp to fields to improve soil fertility. So the question will be, are these being sold solely as biostimulants? Are they going to have any actual effect and elicit the defense response in the host plant as well?
So any products that do make it through the research and the trials and then go through the expensive registration as well, you'll probably have a lot more faith in the product because they have been through all of it and there's been a lot of time, effort and money involved to get.
Yes, absolutely. If you're looking for products, you want to make sure that something that's well studied and well resourced. There are other biostimulants there and there are quite complex ones. We were involved. We had a look at some of these products and they're actually a mix of different products. And as I said, and when you're doing scientific research, it's to try and evaluate which of the products is having the effect can be difficult when you've got such complex mixes. But I mean, a lot of these biostimulants have recorded impact on boosting yield. But again, if you're trying to work out which compound in the mix is having the effect on the plant diseases, that can be more of a challenge.
As these are natural products, would you be able to use them on an organic farm?
So Iodis, yeah, something like Iodis is recommended, it's approved for use on organic farms because it purely comes from the seaweed extract, so there's no synthetic chemistry involved. So yeah, it's approved for organic production as well.
That's always a great thing because I know organic farmers are very limited in what they can use.
Yeah, so that, and again, for the organic growers, it's something like Iodis is just boosting the mechanism in the host plant. So you're not worrying about, oh, what am I adding onto the leaf? Is this taking me away from organic? Because there's nothing synthetic in the product as well.
So using elicitors, they're probably only being put on once onto a crop rather than multiple times?
We have in our trials, we've looked at the, you know, if there's any benefit in multiple applications. And some of the research on elicitors in other crops suggests there might be. But I think in terms of cereal production, we're looking at that early application at that early timing. The T0, well before T1, is getting them on it at that point. There's a lot of interest in elicitors in other crops as well. There was a recent review paper which looked at how they're used in all sorts of different production systems around the world. And there they're looking at perhaps multiple applications where you've got things like vines, you know, permanent cropping plants which are there, you know, not just your annual cereal crop which is going to be gone. And so perhaps there's benefit for multiple applications. But from our research, we've just found the best approach is definitely the one use of the elicitor and in combination with a reduced rate fungicide.
What about weather? Because I know this year it has been a very wet winter, and the crops and the fields are very wet. Does that have an impact? And does temperature have an impact as well?
It shouldn't be, as long as you get the product on and it elicits the defense response in the plant. Obviously, you want a plant that's just healthy and growing in good conditions. One of the arguments or one of the concerns about these elicitors was it produces compounds which are what we call secondary metabolites. So the primary metabolites in any plant growing is basically producing more cells, more assimilate for growth and maintenance. So if you apply these elicitors and you're priming the defense responses, that's diverting energy away from growth and I guess ultimately yield. So is there a yield cost or yield benefit for using elicitors? But we've not found them in our research. If anything, you know, there's a yield response. But if the plant isn't doing well, it's not growing well, you really don't want to divert energy away from primary growth and production. We've not seen anything that suggests they would severely inhibit the plant if the plants are wet and are struggling. But you're right, it's something perhaps to think about. You'd be, I guess, we're governed with it, something like Iodis, we're governed with the growth stage it can go on. So you would hope by that point the conditions would have improved and the plant was starting to grow more rapidly and tiller out and heading towards stem extension.
Neil, have you found that there has been an appetite from farmers for Iodis or other elicitors?
That's a good question, Tiffany. We do the HDB SRUC roadshows every winter and we've talked about elicitors for a good number of years, and every year we get farmers asking when products are going to be available. The Iodis at the moment has a registration in wheat, but the company's working on registration for barley and other crops. So there is a lot of interest. A lot of farmers at the moment are looking for something new, looking for alternatives. They're looking for different ways to do things. And elicitors really ticks one of these boxes.
I think as well, people are very aware about fungicides and that there is reducing efficacy, and we don't know how long they're going to be available and working well as well. So it's better now to be thinking about what other options are available instead of just relying on fungicides.
No, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of still of grey areas and a lot of unknowns about the new agriculture bill in Scotland. But, you know, if one of the targets, and then an old Scottish government was looking towards Europe for a lead, so Europe was aiming towards 50% reduction in pesticides. I know that's been delayed for a while, but if that's the general, you know, direction of travel that people are looking at is reduced fungicides inputs. So you're looking for an alternative product, and elicitors is something that ticks the bill.
I wasn't aware that they were looking at reducing use of pesticides. So that would be something interesting to keep an eye out going forward if they do go back to looking at that again.
It will be, I think, and given the current political makeup of the Scottish government, it's not something you can imagine that would be quite popular with some of the cabinet members is trying to reduce pesticide use. So, as I said, there's a lot of the details still to be added to the agriculture bill, but it may well be the general direction of travel is people are looking at systems with less fungicide input. So that means you are forced to look at alternatives. And that's something we've been doing. It's in the Scottish Government and funded research we're doing. We're looking at alternatives in the IPM programme. We're looking at effect of tillage. We're looking at the effect of elicitors, how they fit in the programme, and also other products like biostimulants and biologicals as well.
So it is pulling on a whole range of different aspects to then be able to grow your crop as well as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's fair to say there is a great appetite for people looking for alternative products, and there's a lot of interest, and without using the R word, it's just, you know, as Henry Christen says, he hates using that word, but regenerative. People are interested in regenerative. There's a lot of interest in some farmers are producing their own either biostimulant or plant protection products. So if anyone who's been up to the HDB strategic farm, David Aglin, in Fife, he's looking at producing his own compost teas as a plant protection product. So I think there is a great appetite amongst farmers and growers for trying something new, trying alternatives. So for us researchers, we have to try and keep up to date and always keep one step ahead of the way the industry is going. We'd like to be able to provide them with some independent advice and some independent data to back up some of the claims of some products.
Well, it's great to hear farmers are pushing the researchers along as well and coming up with innovative ways to try things, and it's keeping you on your toes as well.
Well, you have to be. It's when I think back to my time previously, you could say agriculture was, you know, perhaps slow progression from year to year, but certainly we've seen in the last few years there's a rapid change in production systems, a rapid interest in doing something different, probably accelerated by the changes in support schemes as well. And I think what we'll see is possibly a divergence amongst farmers. You'll get some people who'll continue growing for yield, heavily quite intensive, but you'll get a lot more interest in people looking at lowering their inputs and seeing if they can still produce the margin on the crops with less of the inputs and stepping back perhaps from the high input systems they may have been involved in the past.
I do think it's a very interesting time for farmers, and there is so many great novel ideas out there, and some farmers are really into it, others aren't, but it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the industry in the next few years. So with elicitors, is there any new products that you think are coming to market fairly soon or not?
I've not seen, or we've not been contacted with a huge amount of things coming to market at the moment. There is a lot, as I say, there's a lot of interest from the chemical companies in some products. There's some of the recent research that SRUC has been doing on potato work at our Auchin Crewe site. They've been looking at phosphonate, and that's been known to elicit defence response in crops as well. So that of any of the products might be something to keep your eye on, something coming through that might be a potential elicitor for the future.
Well, it's good to know that there is something that's a potential in the future, but I'm sure it's still got to finish going through all its research and then all the funding to get it approved as well.
Absolutely. And you can get close to, you know, you can have, so what companies, when they develop these products, they'll put them in their own screening, then they'll put them out to wider trials. But then if they're going for that full registration, then that's that detailed set of trials they have to do to standard format to produce the dossier to get it registered.
Yeah, so it's quite time consuming as well, so it's probably not going to be here tomorrow.
No, quite. The wheels move slowly in terms of getting products registered. Like I say, UPL have been working on extending the registration for IODIS for a good few years, and it's always been a case of next year, well, maybe not till the year after.
Yeah.
So it's kind of patience is a virtue, and it's needed, I think, in terms of elicitors coming to market.
Definitely. But it's good to hear that with the elicitors, there's good trials that are required so people can have more confidence in them, especially when there's less requirements on biostimulants and such like.
Absolutely. It's and I think that will be the big difference. Anything that slips into, as I said, the plant protection product category is going to need a lot more robust data behind it. Because when you put the claims on the label, any farmer or grower that spends money on it will be looking for that level of control. And if it's not there, you know, manufacturers are, if they've claimed it, they are liable if it doesn't perform as expected.
Which I think is quite right, though, if you've bought something for the claims, then yeah, I agree. So if you've got a farmer who's thinking about using elicitors, whether now or in the future, what advice would you give them?
Just think about how you construct your program. Where do you see them fitting into the program in terms of the products? As I said, there are limitations on the use at the moment of IODIS in terms of it's an early disease control. For a farmer, I would ask them to think about, you know, what possible issues they might have in the crop going forward, what are the disease issues they might have. Think about your varietal choice as well. I mean, the elicitor will boost your defense response, but if you've got an inherently weak variety against certain diseases, it's not going to improve your resistance ratings from a 4 to a 9, put it that way. Okay, your level of expectation with the elicitor, it will boost your defense system, but it's not going to be a magic bullet, put it that way. So they think about it in that context as well. So don't expect it's going to make a very weak variety into a very strong variety.
I think that's a very good piece of advice. yeah, it's very easy to get caught up thinking that it's going to be the magic bullet, but actually you've got your starting point, and the weather will play an impact as well, and the season will play an impact too. So that's great. Thank you very much for your time, Neil.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you, Tiffany.
Now we have an update from out in the field.
Hi, my name is Mark Boucher-Gibbs, and I'm a consultant with SAC Consulting. As we are all very well aware, we're coming into a very much later period than usual for getting spring crops into the ground. And for the majority of growers, it will be into April before ground conditions allow for any kind of field work and seedbed preparation. Spring beans would ideally have been sown in March, and there may be a few that have managed to get beans in the ground. And for crops like spring barley, spring wheat and oats, most crops will be sown through April, with the last to go in possibly as late as early May. In a late season like this, final yields will be influenced to a greater degree by the extent to which plants can tiller before moving into their reproductive growth stages. Soil moisture and good seed-to-soil contact is required for good germination. However, where soil is very wet, such as a season like this, oxygen becomes a limiting factor which can reduce germination. One way we can help mitigate the downsides of late sowing this year is to pay particular attention to seed rates, so we optimise the number of ears per metre squared come harvest. Of course, we know spring barley has a better capacity for tillering, while spring oats and spring wheats less so. When calculating seed rates through April, aim to establish 350 plants per metre squared for spring barley, 360 plants per metre squared for spring oats, and 380 plants per metre squared for spring wheat. Your final seed rate calculation should account for the seed's 1,000 grain weight the germination percentage, and your expectations for establishment rate. As a general rule of thumb, increase seed rates by 50 seeds per meter squared from your original calculation for each week that sowing is delayed beyond the first week of April. This will help achieve target fertile tiller numbers through to harvest.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Cropcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe or follow. If you want to find out more about anything we've discussed on the show, or you'd like to get in touch, you can find all details in the show notes. If you enjoy listening to Cropcast, you may enjoy some of our other podcasts, such as Natural Capital, where the most recent episode discusses agri-environment schemes, which many people also know as EECs. This is a great scheme which supports farmers wanting to implement sustainable land management practices. Listen to the podcast to find out about the opportunities to create, restore, and enhance natural capital assets and how you can apply. Look out for the second episode in this two-part series, and we'll see you again next time. This episode was hosted by myself, Tiffany Stevenson, produced by George Gawley, executive producer Kerry Hammond, and edited by Cameron Woch. This podcast is produced in association with the Scottish Government.
The Farm Advisory Service Podcast. Audio advice on livestock, crops and soils, environment, rural business, and more. Brought to you in association with the Scottish Government.